From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. The beginning of this week heralded another legal setback for the Postal Service's operational changes. On Monday, a New York federal district court ruled as part of its decision, quote, "Now more than ever, the Postal Service's status as a symbol of national unity must be validated by the demonstrated degree of its commitment to utmost effectiveness of election mail services," end quote. The court concluded as part of its ruling, "Multiple failures have undermined the postal employees' ability to fulfill their vital mission," end quote. As a result, the federal court ordered, one, that the United States Postal Service treat election mail as first-class mail, two, that overtime cannot be denied for the purpose of processing election mail, three, the Postal Service must submit a plan to the court to restore on-time delivery to a 93.8% rating, and four, the Postal Service must provide the court with weekly on-time delivery reports and other operational reports as determined by the court. In the meantime, the Postal Service sent out a memorandum to postal employees clarifying its operational status relating to overtime, hiring, retail hours, collection boxes, late trips, mail processing, and election mail. Apparently, this was an attempt to address the court rulings and to placate members of Congress. Now to this week's guest on Naps Chat. I am pleased to welcome Kevin Fogarty, Chief of Staff, to Congressman Peter King. Over the past two decades, Kevin has worked in a variety of capacities for Representative King, spanning administrative, communications, and legislative functions, the last 15 years being his top aide. Congressman King was a guest on Naps Chat in the early spring. Also, Kevin has lectured at Georgetown University and the Brookings Institute. Welcome to Naps Chat, Kevin.
Hey, thank you, Bob. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, Kevin, I want to start talking about the unique history of the congressional district represented by Congressman King in Long Island. It has been devastated by three crises over the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. There was first 9/11, that impacted all of the New York City metropolitan area. There was Superstorm Sandy in 2012, which devastated the congressman's district. It destroyed a considerable amount of property and dislocated thousands of Long Islanders in the district. And most recently, the effect that the pandemic has had on the New York City metropolitan area. Could you explain, as far as congressional office operations go, how congressional offices react to such crises?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, we suffered a number of casualties on September 11th that impacted directly our constituency, which was on Long Island. But the ripple effects from that, you all knew friends and family in that area. So it was something that would really impact more so on a personal level for our congressional district than some other ones nationwide doing that. But once something devastating like that happens, your job as a congressional office is really to start coordinating and helping with the response. What agencies need to get involved? Where are there problems that we need to have resources sent? And you can sort of respond to that. You really become a all hands on deck type conduit to help the victims, to help other agencies, local officials, state officials. Anything that the federal government can help with in response, you want to be able to assist those folks. You know, when we deal with things like Superstorm Sandy and hurricanes, like even the Katrina, that have such a devastating impact, the one thing about them is that in those particular cases, you have agencies who are conditioned to respond. They know what the physical damage most likely will be. They understand the risk for human life displacement. And they've been conditioned, you can say unfortunately, to respond to so many of these hurricanes that they know what they're doing and they know what they need and they know what resources they need. And in a lot of ways, in those cases, we're helping constituents who may have a more particular problem, and sometimes it's not necessarily related to the government. It could be with insurance companies. We're trying to help facilitate some sort of communication between the two to resolve a matter. But with the pandemic, that was completely different because nobody really knew what was going on. Nobody really knew what the answers were. Nobody really knew yet how great the impact was going to be and how severe. And I think in that particular situation, what we tried to do was learn as much as we can about what's going to be needed, who are going to be the responsible agencies, who are we going to need to get in touch with, being communicating with our governor's office, local officials in the counties and the towns and villages, what's going to be needed, where are they seeing problems? Because, you know, as you know, the hotspots would pop up in different areas throughout the country. And what was going to be needed, the possibility for a vaccine, resources that hospitals are going to need, it was much different than previous disasters. And also the fact was that, you know, obviously many staff members, especially in Congress, were sheltering in place as well. Offices were closed, so we had to resort then to rely on technology to communicate with folks. And that was a unique experience, not having, and as you know, when members are getting lobbied in Congress or having meetings, a lot of it is face-to-face. Here, obviously, we were relying on technology and getting set up, and we were also having to reposition the jobs for some of our staff members, especially in this particular case where we have legislative staff in D.C. who work on legislative issues. In many cases, they had to be repositioned to handle casework, meaning we needed help coordinating those people who are having problems health-wise, getting in touch with the hospital, getting in touch with any agency or anything for equipment, tests, et cetera. So we really had to recalibrate ourselves in how we were addressing that, and yet at the same time acknowledging what we didn't know. You know, we thought this would be the best answer, who we would have to contact. So there was a lot of uncertainty in that front, and there was also making sure our means of communication, the way that we could be contacted, was very accessible still, even though our offices weren't going to be open.
Let me ask you, Kevin, when you recalibrate your office operations, for example, on a normal year, a legislative calendar, you look at what types of appropriation bills come up or postal bills, whatever, all of a sudden a disaster occurs or a healthcare crisis occurs. How do you recalibrate your staff to shift from the legislative angle to taking care of your constituents, because different offices handle it different ways?
Sure. In our particular case, I think all our staff realize that, you know, depending on the issue of the day, when I say that, you know, as you know, things will occur and that sometimes will shift your focus on what you're planning to try to tackle or do. So you're always going to have that flexibility. I think in the House of Representatives, it's a little bit different, say, from the Senate, because a lot of the staff tend to handle multiple issues. And so they do have that flexibility of having to prioritize and adjust. And so that's a little unique, at least for the House, because I think in the Senate, given the larger staff, they have an ability just to focus on one issue or two at most. So in this particular case, especially with House staff, I feel that that flexibility of adjusting your own particular schedule on issues or the issue of the day or the legislative issue, you have that flexibility. In this particular case, we weren't really having to deal with the legislative issues. We were having to deal with the casework. And by the casework, I mean, that's a phrase that we generally use for individuals who will contact a congressional office because they're having a particular problem with an agency, you know, whether it's Social Security or the Veterans Administration. Those are the types of things that we normally have our district offices handle. So when I'm talking about recalibrating because of the volume of problems that we were getting on, when I say this, on a casework basis that didn't impact legislation, we had to ask our leg staff to help out, to contact agencies, et cetera, or to see if they could solve these problems themselves as well in conjunction with our district staff. So that would be a little bit of it. So the biggest problem, though, is making sure from a communication standpoint, our constituents are able to reach out. And that, sometimes it's done on social media, Facebook, Twitter, you know, and a lot of times what we did in our district office, in our Washington, D.C. offices, if people called our office, we had a voicemail message, which would indicate the email address. We would ask somebody to send their full name, address, and phone number, and the problem. And we'd have somebody who's monitoring that all the time, so that, for as soon as that email came in, we could assign it to a staffer, and that staffer could get right in touch with the constituent. In our district office, we also had our district director's cell phone. And so a lot of times phone calls were forwarded to her cell phone. And the same thing, she would take down the information, and we would just try to respond as quickly as we could. So that was a little bit more unique, and it was more of an all-hands-on-deck, because the reality was that the amount of legislation just wasn't being addressed. So we had that flexibility to, quote-unquote, reassign staffers for that, for those issues.
When Congressman King or any other member of Congress reprioritizes the issues that are addressed by their office, shifting from the legislative focus to dealing with the constituency focus in terms of making sure the Social Security checks get deposited in the right place, or federal emergency management assistance relief and so forth.
Sure.
For those groups that still have legislative agendas, how should they be communicating to your office or to any congressional office? Because the priorities for an individual member has changed as a result of this, of a health crisis or a natural or man-made disaster.
Sure. And that's not to say that, you know, you try to take that attitude of walking and chewing gum at the same time, having that flexibility so we can have a legislative director who, at the same time, while we're still helping people, also keeping an eye on what's going on. We're also having those same channels for organizations, advocacy groups, et cetera, to still get in touch with us because, yes, there's still going to be timely issues for them as well and what needs to be done. So you try to have that flexibility, and like I said, we'll sometimes rotate staff in terms of shifts, et cetera, working on casework versus the legislative component. But the beauty of technology is that you can just stay in touch and coordinate, and that's what our staff does. You know, we would just say, I need you to take care of this, I need you to deal with this, this is the time frame, et cetera. And, you know, the staff responds accordingly. I think Congress gets a bad rap a lot of times, I think, because there's this idea that there's not a lot getting done. But there truly is a lot getting done on an individual basis, casework, and even on legislation and particular issues that may not make it to the media. But for the most part, everybody, and not even crossing party lines, anything like that, it's just that everybody works hard and they have the right interests at heart. And I feel like you'll counter just a lot of hardworking people, just like you would at the Postal Service.
That's a great segue, Kevin. The last conversation I had with Congressman King was about the importance of the Postal Service in times
right.
of crisis, and that I know that the congressman was chairman of the Homeland Security Committee a number of congresses ago, and he was part of the effort to, I guess, identify the Postal Service as an essential part of the governmental infrastructure at times of crisis. Can you tell me how you've interacted with the Postal Service and how it has served your district in these times of crisis?
Sure, yeah. No, the congressman, for a long, long time, has that view of the Postal Service. And, you know, even recently, I hate to say this, you know, sometimes it's good to have caucuses. You bring attention to issues that other members of Congress may not know about or understand. And the congressman was able to co-chair with Chairwoman Maloney and, I believe, Rep. Connolly of Virginia and Rep. Amadei of Nevada, the Postal Preservation Caucus. And I think that there was information missing for a lot of members that truly didn't understand the role the Postal Service plays. And especially when you're dealing with something like a pandemic, the ability to deliver goods and services every day, you're talking about life-saving medications, just even, you know, this past year alone. And then we're also dealing with economic stimulus checks, unemployment benefits, people who are sheltering in place, or those who are in rural areas that don't have that ability to get access to. And especially in this tough situation in the pandemic, you're relying on the Postal Service to get that stuff done. And, you know, also putting their lives at risk because, again, this pandemic for a good period of time, when we go from March, April, May, there's still a lot of unknowns how to do that. But a lot of these workers had to put themselves on the line and interact with people at their own health risk just to make sure that this stuff was getting through to keep this economy going, to keep some sense of security and safety. And that's the important role. And I don't think that people in Congress truly understand just how independent the Postal Service is. I think there's a mindset that it's similar to the Department of Agriculture in terms of the funding it gets and how it operates. But it's a very unique government entity, and it's invaluable. And I think that's what Congressman King was trying to do, and Chairwoman Maloney, is educating other members about what's truly needed and why we need this Postal Service and why we need this funds to keep it going. Because otherwise, in its absence, there are going to be a number of supply chain issues.
Now, I know that Congressman King and Congressman Maloney were closely in introducing a bill, H.R. 7015, earlier this Congress, and he supported H.R. 8015, passed more recently. And that, in part, H.R. 8015, the more recent legislation, which passed the House in the Delivering for America Act, called upon the Postal Service to restore the services, the machinery and the mail processing services that had been available prior to June. Question, did those reductions surprise Congressman King?
I don't know if it surprised him. I think, you know, you realize sometimes the day-to-day stuff you're not going to be up to speed on with what's going on and some of the decision-making that has to be made or the reallocation of resources. I think, you know, for the congressman, especially when we were also talking about the $25 billion, we had to make sure that the essential services were going to be taken care of. And I think that's what you're trying to find out from these agencies when you're contacting them and getting information, getting letters out. You want to have that dialogue going so that you truly understand, why was this decision made? Was it the correct decision? And if it wasn't the correct decision, how do we correct that?
And Congress has a role in the oversight of the Postal Service to ensure that the correct decision was made and it was done, and it for the right reasons.
Right. And I think that's what you want. And sometimes, you know, it's just you get into that situation where if you don't know all the factors, you don't want to jump to that conclusion that saying, oh, this was the wrong decision, without knowing all the facts. And I think having that oversight role and having that dialogue helps, because it can shed light on a situation or shed light on another problem that you could foresee coming if something else isn't addressed. And I think that's where it's really critical in the oversight function, just to make sure, because you're bringing a little sunlight to a situation. And that's important.
I want to come back to communicating and advocacy within Congress under the current situation where offices are sort of operating remotely and we're relying on technology. As a chief of staff to a member of Congress, how would you like to be communicated to with regard to members, let's say, of NAPS or other organizations who want to weigh in on a particular piece of legislation or a particular issue, like saving the Postal Service?
Sure. I think I can put this in context a little bit, too, because if we do a little bit of pre-pandemic communication and advocacy, you know, this is an important thing and ties in a little bit with the Postal Service, but, you know, the Congress would always take priority on handwritten letters, because the idea was that somebody sat down, took the time to write out this letter of some issue that was important to them. So that was the priority. Because you had to realize, too, you have a number of, we used to get form faxes, form emails, that were sent on behalf of an individual by an organization advocating for a legislative matter. And in some cases, those individuals had no idea that those emails were being sent with their names attached, even though probably at some point they signed up with an organization, you know, and agreed that whatever the organization wanted to do, they could use their name. So in many cases, sometimes we would respond to a letter and this person would come back and say, I never contacted you on this. And you'd have to match it up and go back and show that you know, they were contacted, but we got this in this email. And part of that is also showing the intent, the importance of an individual to an issue, and keeping track of how many letters, how many emails, how many phone calls are we getting on issues? What is resonating? What is important? And what are constituents asking for? And that is key. And I say that in terms of the advocacy, you know, whatever the issue is, even if it's something not related to the Postal Service, even if it's a personal issue, contacting your member of Congress is key, because you never want to have a member say, I haven't heard from anybody on this issue, or I'm not familiar with that, I haven't heard that. But when you start getting a lot of mail and phone calls, you know, staff lets the member know that, and that something needs to be done. So you start looking at what are the fixes for this particular issue that people are upset about or want fixed. How can we help? And that gets the process moving. I think that pre-pandemic, you had organizations who would do what we call the fly-in lobby days, where you would have constituents within those organizations meet with the members in their office to talk about issues that are important to their organization. And that's key, because like anything, if you can personalize an issue for a member and to show the impact that issue has on his congressional or her congressional district, that is key. Now that we're dealing a little bit with the pandemic and we're not having those in-person meetings, we're relying on technology to have those meetings and to advocate. And sometimes it's a little bit harder to get onto the member's attention or run into him in a hallway or have the chance to see him in the district and get him that information in person. So, yeah, we're going to have to rely a little bit on the Zoom calls. And I think the best way to do that is to contact the staff and indicate that you would like to have a meeting with the congressman. I think if you can try to do something where you have more members, the better in terms of that particular Zoom call, because, again, numbers matter. But also it's helpful in terms of scheduling things to have, rather than having individual Zoom sessions, you can have a number of advocates meeting all at once to discuss things with the congressman. So you have a little bit less of the retail ability, but that said, there's still ways to communicate with congressional offices and to make sure your voice is being heard.
Let's shift gears a little bit, and this will be the final area that I'd like to sort of explore with you. Congressman King is retiring from Congress at the end of this year, and that brings some unique challenges to you as a chief of staff. You've had time to prepare for that.
Right,
there are
right.
going to be some members of Congress who are going to be defeated in the elections right. in November. There are going to be others who, for whatever reason, decide to resign their seat. Tell me about winding down office operations and protecting the legacy of the Congressman King.
Yeah, it's bittersweet. You understand the decision being made by the member that they're going to move on to another chapter in their life. But certainly in my particular case, Congressman King has been in Congress almost 30 years, and I've been with him now a little over 22 years. And you realize all the paperwork, all the letters, the bills, everything that you've saved and archived has to be processed. And it's daunting in a lot of ways. And like you said, too, I'm fortunate in the sense that the congressman decided to announce that he wasn't going to run again. So I have some time to start getting that process going. The reality is for some members who face defeat on election day, in some cases, you could see it coming, or in others, it's just a complete shock. In fairness, for them to process not only that it's over, but also to turn around and really get out of your office as quickly as you can, because in most cases, when you lose or you're retiring, before Thanksgiving and right after the election, you're pretty much out of your office physically. They will give you assigned space, but, life moves on, and there's a lot of coordination that has to go for the incoming members and office changes around the Capitol. And that's a reality, but you have to physically get out of your office and move things out quickly. So for now, a lot of it is Congressman King's letters, things that we have signed on with anything congressional will be going to his alma mater, Notre Dame, where they'll set up an archive for him there with his congressional papers.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to the member to decide what they want to do with their papers. And so that can vary. Some may not want an institution to have them, and it's completely up to them. But it does take a lot of hours and preparation to go through everything that you've done over the past 30 years.
It is a tremendous legacy, and Congressman King has always been a wonderful friend and champion of members of the National Association of Postal Supervisors. And please extend our best wishes to the congressman that he be safe and be healthy. And Kevin, once again, thank you for appearing on NAPS Chat.
I will, Bob. I appreciate that. And I should say, too, that throughout the years, you've been incredibly receptive and helpful. And anytime that we've needed information and getting a good idea of what's going on the ground, you've always been receptive and given us stuff. And we truly appreciate that.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. To our listeners, if you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave a positive review on the Apple's podcast store And more important, tell your friends to download our podcast and listen in. Be well and be safe till next week.
I'm gonna bend right down and write myself a letter.